Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We have a very special episode for you tonight, a seven-round mock draft that was done on Reddit with a number of users on r/NFL. Joining me to do this are Matt and Tony, who made the picks for the Baltimore Ravens. Matt, how you doing?
Doing good, Ken.
Tony, how you doing?
I'm doing great, my friend. Happy to be on the show. Thank you.
Great to have you back. Tony, we've met in person once at an analytics dinner a number of years ago, right? That was you?
That was not me.
That was not you. It was not Tony, for those who wanted to know. I thought it was. I thought Tony G. Fool, I thought that was you. Anyway, appreciate you guys both coming on. Seven-round mock. We're looking forward to it. Give us the background on this, Tony.
Yeah, so, you know, on the Ravens subreddit, someone reached out and they said, hey, you know, we're looking for folks to make picks for each team on the 2026 r/NFL mock draft that they do annually. And when I saw that come up, I hopped on and said, threw my name in the hat and said, I would love to do it. And then, you know, I got an invite on Discord and that's kind of how it happened. And then it turned out to be a very fun, awesome activity. It was a very collaborative process and learned a lot. And it was, you know, at times I felt like I was EDC in the seat or Ozzie Newsome, and it was a really good time. But so kind of prior to April 3rd is when they started recruiting all the reps and ensured permission was granted. April 3rd is when it was kind of official and began posting tentative trades, you know, if that was to be, which there ended up being a few pre-draft trades between certain teams and certain managers. And then come April 12th is kind of when they capped it and said, okay, no more pre-draft trades. There was lots of trades that went on during the draft, as we'll speak about. And then, the first day of the draft was April 18th. And the first day was round one, which had 8 minutes, and round two, which had a 7-minute timer. And then Sunday, which was mock day two, round three was 5 minutes. And then round four through seven, you had 2 minutes for each pick.
Okay, so we went through pretty quickly. Entire process took, what, about 12 hours?
I think it was about 4 hours on the second day. And on the first day, I think it was about three. So maybe about 7 hours total, I think.
Not too bad. People must have been prepared to get that done as quickly as they did, but that's good, guys. Matt, why don't you take us and jump right into round one here, and we're kind of want to hear through the thought process of each selection as they went down.
Yeah, so to kind of set the board here, we didn't really think that we were in a position with so few rostered players on the team to make any big splash trades to move up in round one. We considered that briefly, kind of shot it down, but we all had a list that we put together before the draft. We put together our individual lists of like top 13 players, obviously kind of excluding Fernando Mendoza. And it ended up working out that we both landed on the same player when it came time to pick at pick 14, and that is Vanga Ioane. To set the stage a bit, all the top three edge rushers were gone. Carnell Tate and Mekhi Lemon were also gone. The top two corners, Mansoor Delane and Jermaine McCoy, both gone. Maui Goa, also gone. Caleb Downs, Sonny Styles, Jeremiah Love, gone as well. So the way we saw it, Vanga was the, Sadiq also went pick 13. So he was gone as well. So at that point, Vanga to us was the favorite. We had considered Spencer Fano, but the eventual decision was that we felt that it was a more sure thing to have Vanga than taking Fano's projection to center or to guard or another position on the interior. We felt that it was the highest floor pick we could make, sort of a low risk, high reward scenario.
Okay. And I a lot of people taking this process pretty seriously is clear. This looks like an extremely chalky draft. The one name that's left out of the top 13 I thought might have been there was Tyson. Well, Fano also, but Tyson go at 21 to Pittsburgh seems a little bit cheap, but on the other, I think he could be the best pure receiver in the draft, but he's got the scary ass medical history.
Yeah, you're absolutely right on that. He was briefly in consideration, but for the same reason you just mentioned, we were just too terrified by his injury history. We both had him graded near the bottom of our 13. I believe I had him at 13. I think, Anthony, you might also have him at number 13 on your list as well.
Correct.
Yeah, we just weren't comfortable with his injuries to pick him at pick 14.
So after Sadiq was taken, the only really serious consideration was Fano, and you explained that you just didn't like his projection at center. I still think I would probably like it more. You did mention to me that this was done prior to the Dexter Lawrence trade.
Yes.
So you didn't have that. Yep. Would your opinion change at all if you knew about the Dexter Lawrence trade?
Personally, no. And if anything, it would make me feel more confident about my pick.
Okay.
Just given Venga's pass protection that he's shown in college, he's an incredible pass protector. I think pairing him up with who we'll introduce as our third round pick is probably the best we could have done realistically to prepare our offensive line for the seemingly now gauntlet of interior rushers that we'll be seeing in the AFC North.
Yeah, that's certainly a big concern coming out of this. I think actually they certainly gave up a lot. The Bengals did. They gave up the opportunity to draft Francis Mauinoa if your draft had gone off as real life. An opportunity lost to draft McCoy. Either of those. Caleb Downs did go at number 8, and that's one of the really big, nice things about the Dexter Lawrence trade is it makes it clear that the Bengals are not going to be a team that gets Caleb Downs. That would scare the hell out of me.
Yeah. Interesting note that it was actually Dallas who traded up to 8 to pick Caleb Downs.
All right. Very good. All right. So now that's great for round one. I don't think there's a huge surprise in there. You've explained your reasoning for going that. Take us into the Ravens' second pick. And I guess you're doing this, Tony, because we're alternating, right?
Yep. So the only thing I will add is that I did have Sadiq one pick higher or one slot higher than Ione. So when Sadiq went one pick before us, it was a very easy call. Okay. So going into round two, I would say this was probably our most tumultuous pick. It took us to the very, very last seconds to turn the card in, so to speak. We were on the phone with the figurative phone to a couple teams trying to make a trade happen. There was a few players we really liked in that 45 slot that we felt we could move back maybe a couple spots and still get. But going into round two, there was guys like Denzel Boston, Akeem Mezidor, Peter Woods, Zion Young. Any of those guys, if they fell to 45, would have been pretty easy decisions. I think we would have taken any of them, but that did not happen. So when it was our turn to pick at 45, there was three guys we really liked. Chris Johnson, the cornerback out of San Diego State. Gabe Aukus, I think is how you pronounce his name, the edge out of Illinois, and then Eli Stowers. So a couple of us, I think Matt really liked Aukus. I really like Stowers, and I'm also a really big fan of Chris Johnson. I think what the deciding thing was once we didn't have time to make a trade, I think we have five cornerbacks on a rookie contract. We're on their first contract and then with two vets. So I think that, you know, that kind of swayed us towards Stowers. I'm a huge fan of him. I think a lot of people think he can't be a tight end. He can't block because he didn't really show it in college. But I think the Ravens have done an incredible job of developing tight ends to block. I remember when Likely came out of college, oh, he's a great move tight end. He's a great pass catcher, but he can't block. And he turned out to be just fine. I don't think Stowers is going to be Crockett Gilmore or Charlie Kolar for that, but I think he's just an incredibly explosive weapon for the Ravens. I think he's almost two positions in one. He could be an X receiver. I've seen him line up in the backfield. I think he could play move tight end. You know, the 45 inch vertical leap with the 4.5 speed is something pretty special. Yeah, go ahead.
One question that comes up is Stowers is kind of like a Sadiq Jr. in this draft. And the reason is
he's
a tight end who blurs the lines between 11 and 12 personnel that you can put in there. And, you know, the goal would have to be, and I think you get this with Sadiq. I'm not sure if you get this with Stowers. I think Stowers will actually be considered a wide receiver in the NFL. But I think Sadiq, it's more likely that he's going to be able to play enough snaps in line. You can quote unquote keep him as a tight end, or use the fact that you might keep him as a tight end in order to hammer out a favorable contract at the time it comes to. For Sadiq, I feel like if the Ravens draft him, they have a lot of leverage to keep him in purple for his entire career, or at least for two contracts. Whereas Stowers, well, first of all, Stowers in the second round doesn't have a fifth-year option, so it's only the franchise tag you'd be depending on. But I think it's also probably less likely they're going to be able to play the game because I think he's going to play less total snaps in line. Now, you guys mentioned the blocking thing. Do you think they can get him to a point in terms of inline snaps that they can really sell the notion that he's a tight end and not have this go through some sort of a grievance arbitration?
I personally think so, and I'm banking on that because, again, if he does become just strictly a wide receiver, it's going to be a lot pricier come down the line. But, you know, I feel good about him being a tight end. And then, you know, with Declan Doyle, you know, a tight ends coach under Sean Payton, and, you know, his use of tight ends with Ben Johnson, I think, you know, he's really going to cook, so to speak, with if we were to get Stowers. I would love to see him with Lamar and, you know, watching the tape, just his quick slant routes, moving chains, big red zone target I really like. So, and then I think I will mention this now. We could also touch on it later, but in hindsight, this was the one pick where we were like, we really liked it at the time and still do, but we feel like, you know, someone like, let me look at my notes, Justin Jolly went to Washington in the fifth round. So that's something that maybe we could have waited on Stowers and we could have got someone like that later. So.
So I kind of like Sadiq for that reason, and then another tight end later, and you just let the board fall to you because there's going to be a lot of good tight ends that are left at that point. But I understand it, and you know, guys like Daquan Wright are going to be available on day three, and you know, other guys who are incredible athletes and just haven't put it together really yet completely on the field. But I want to ask you about Chris Johnson because he's a guy I really love for the Ravens at 45. And I think the Ravens need to address the cornerback room clearly in this draft, given the age of the room, frankly. And they've got a lot of young talent, but it's talent they have to sift through. In like Marquise Robinson, who's on the practice squad last year, the longer being Kone, who didn't play at all because of injuries. There's just TJ Tampa. We have no idea going into year three who the guy really is. And also, other than that, he's not probably fast enough to play corner in the league. That really concerns me. And Marlon Humphrey coming off a league where he was the lowest graded pass defense corner, coverage corner in the entire NFL. I certainly hope he's more healthy than he was last year, but I also think there's a good chance that he has to move to safety pretty soon. So I'm just wondering why, did you have any pangs of regret over not spending a higher pick on a corner?
A little bit. I do think Chris Johnson would have been a phenomenal pick at 45. Realistically, I don't think he's going to be there come draft night, but this was the one pick that I do feel like if we had a do-over with the knowledge of where everyone fell in this draft, this might be one we redid. At the same time, given the introduction of Coach Mickens, Coach Minter having a background in defensive backs, I have a feeling that we could have gone into this with potentially kind of neglecting the cornerback position a little bit compared to some of the other needs in the roster, given the substantial draft capital that's been invested there. I have a feeling that Minter is going to be able to get the best out of the defensive backs in the room just with what he was able to do with what he had in Los Angeles. I think this is workable for this year. And we'd sort of be kicking the can down the road towards next offseason to kind of have a more permanent solution at that position.
Okay, so I see two other things interesting happened in the second round. And the first is that Akeem Mesidor falls all the way to number 39 and Miami gets him. There's 32 different teams represented in this mock draft. It wasn't just the Ravens versus a computer. So the point is that a lot of people are taking very seriously the age concerns that go with Akeem Mesidor, because I think that's the reason you don't take him.
I think it's also the injury concerns as well. I believe he's had a couple of those.
Well, fair enough. Two other guys that fell fairly far, Zion Young to number 38. And the other guy I absolutely love is Anthony Hill, who went 41st to Cincinnati. I hate that thought.
Yeah, it was quite an interesting round. I do think it also thing that worth pointing out, something that kind of hampered our ability to potentially draft a different player is coming into the start of the round, I was expecting at least one of, if not both, of Chase Bachantis and Emmanuel Pregnon to be taken before pick 45. It turns out that neither was taken before pick 45. Pregnon went at pick 47 to Indianapolis, and Bachantis went to Atlanta at pick 49, followed shortly by Gennings Dunker to Pittsburgh at pick 53. So the guards going after pick 45, still with that foreknowledge, I don't think we would have changed our first round pick, but it did certainly prevent some talented players from falling into our lap at pick 45.
Was there a thought that either Pregnon, probably not Pregnon, but that Ioane or maybe Bachantis could be made into a center at the NFL level, and you try a projection like that at that pick?
There was not really a thought about that. I personally have had some musings about could Emory Jones potentially try that out. But that's, I think, best left for Dwayne Ledford to figure out.
All right. Let's keep rolling here, because we don't have an unlimited amount of time, but this is a fascinating topic. So let's move on to round three now. There were no trades that created a move up here before round three, right?
Yeah, no, we tried to trade back to pick 48 with the Minnesota Vikings. But that was the big reason why this second round pick kind of went down to the wire. We were hoping to trade back to pick 48 and then maybe one or two of the players we were targeting were off the board to make the decision easier for us. Also potentially to pick up a third round pick, an early fourth, give us some more things to work with. But that ended up falling through. They kind of got cold feet at the end, didn't want to go through with it. So we went ahead, made the pick at 45, and then went on to pick 80. Now, in the third round, some interesting things happened. We kind of were all of the same mind that this is where the center has to be. This is the one pick where we didn't really go with the whole best player available mantra, given how dire the need is on the roster. But funnily enough, we were actually the third team to pick a center, which was pretty surprising to me. I'd considered Minnesota at 82 and Chicago at 89 to be really strong contenders to take a center in the draft. Both ended up taking centers. Chicago took 189. Minnesota waited a couple more rounds to take Parker Brailsford from Alabama. But by the time we picked, Logan Jones and Connor Liu were off the board. Jones went pick 71 to Washington, and Liu went pick 76 to Tennessee, which we actually did not have either as our number one center, which was Jake Slaughter.
Okay.
Who ended up being our pick at 80.
All right, so I'm looking at my own center board, and I've got a number of players higher than Slaughter, who I have at 10. High penalty rate for Slaughter was one of the problems with him in college, and I didn't have Logan Jones higher, though. I did have him. Logan Jones was 11th. I'm really concerned about him as a, you know, assistant player, an older player, and whatnot. But Brian Parker and Sam Hecht are the two I'd like to talk about. So those guys, why not either one of those?
So we didn't really consider Brian Parker much, but Sam Hecht was our number two choice, and he ended up going 89 to the Bears. But our concern with Sam, or we believe that Jake Slaughter was the better pass protector of the two, which is what led us to make that selection.
Okay. And Parker, the tackle from Duke, who is already moved to center in the, I forget if it was the Shrine game or Senior Bowl, whatever, whichever he participated in, he already has started taking snaps at center and is apparently committed to moving there. You know, a big, yes, sort of a vertical athlete. It's certainly true. He doesn't have really challenged size in the way some of the other tackles who are moving inside do. He's almost 33 inches. So that's pretty good. And 29 bench reps, really good college rate of penalties. I'm just wondering, you know, the team that got Parker, were they looking at him to be a center when they did?
Yes, I believe so. Parker ended up going way later to the Chargers at pick 123 in the fourth round.
So he was available at 115, and yes, that's where I have him pegged to the Ravens in this draft.
Yeah. All right.
And I actually did mention him at one point, but I saw him more as a fourth, fifth, probably get him there. But in the third round, we kind of identified this would be the sweet spot for the centers. I think we spoke about it early on, right after the first round even. That third round seems like a really good spot for centers. And again, I did mention Brian Parker, but we felt really good. I think we were on both consensus that Slaughter would be our guy if he was there. So pretty easy pick.
All right. Yeah, fair enough, guys.
The other alternative option that was mentioned was Trey Zoon, and he ended up going pick 101 to Tennessee, so he would not have been available at pick 113. Interesting that Tennessee took two centers back to back, 76 and 101, Connor Lue and Trey Zoon.
Okay, so they've got thoughts that Zoon is going to play guard or something. All right.
Potentially, it could be that they're worried that Connor Lue will not be healthy enough for training camp, which is also some of our concerns. We kind of viewed Connor Lue as a similar situation to how Emory Jones was last year, where he might not have been healthy enough to get that full off-season experience to prepare him to be the week one starter.
Roll us through to round four now. The Ravens are picking at 115 originally. Did you guys move or did you stay right there?
So kind of to just introduce the trade that happened at the start of the round, then I'll head off to Anthony. So at this point in the draft, we were kind of feeling a bit of the pressure of having not addressed the defensive line at all during our picks. So we were starting to explore a trade partner to try and get an additional pick in the fourth round to hopefully address some of that defensive line. So around pick 103, 104, 105, we were able to negotiate a trade with the Green Bay Packers to trade picks 176 and 173 in the fifth round for their pick 120 and pick 236 in the seventh.
Okay, so you moved up your two fives, net you a four and a seven.
Yes. Yep. Thought that was a fair value, and so then we moved on to pick 115.
Yep. So, yeah, we were looking at the surplus of fifth-round picks as packaging one for a fourth round, and glad it worked out. Okay, so after going offense for the first three picks, fortifying the line, providing a weapon for the offense, we were feeling pretty good, but we also felt the need to draft defense at this point. I think we were looking for edges, the best edges available. We had guys like Joshua Josephs. We had Max Llewellyn. We had guys like that. So once they went off the board, it kind of became apparent that the best defensive players we could set our sights on were defensive line three techs. And Chris McClellan was the number one guy on our board we were excited for, but he went at 102. And then when our pick came up at 115, Rashawn Benny was the best player on our board, and he fit an area of need between, you know, we're looking at cornerback still, we're looking at pass rushers slash edge, and we're looking at defensive linemen, specifically the three-tech position. So when Rashawn Benny was there, we ran up the pick, so to speak. I really like Benny. 6'3", 305, long arms, 4.90 40, really good 40 time. That was kind of the best of his athletic testing. Really good run-stopping three-tech. You know, I'm envisioning a world where, fingers crossed, Matt Ibike comes back and Benny could be the early down three-tech. Really great run defender. Very low missed tackle rate. Strong motor. Had a really good Pro Bowl. not the most explosive guy, but I think with his motor, and I think he can provide some pass rush. I think he will develop that as time goes on. And I think he's a really good two gap defender.
Okay. So he has an 11.4-1 stops to missed tackle ratio for his career. I love Benny. I had him as my number eight interior defender. I think in a lot of ways he meets the Ravens' needs. And I wouldn't have been upset with a pick at 115. I have a 4/5 round value on him, which means 4 at par, 5 for value kind of thing. So I think you guys got a good value then. Little older, coming out of Michigan. He was playing behind some guys there who didn't make it easy for him, but really love him as a player. So that's a good pick. I'm excited about that one.
Yeah, play behind Mason Graham and company.
Grant, yeah.
Yeah. There was a consideration as well for Caleb Proctor at that pick, but I kind of viewed him as more of a situational pass rusher, and we kind of already have one of those on the roster with Fub Peebles. So didn't want to double up at that. Like Anthony said, we wanted a more run defending three tech to kind of be that early down guy.
So, but you're probably are hoping with that selection, if the Ravens went to camp with those players, that Benny effectively takes Peebles' job. Matabike is healthy enough that Benny takes Peebles' job because
yes.
Matabike is going to be in that three-tech role. There's no place for a five-tech now on the Ravens, is there? Specifically.
Doesn't feel like it.
Yeah. So they you know, five-tech basically competes with Kyle Hamilton for snaps. It's big nickel versus playing three down linemen, and the Ravens have kind of made their choice there. So it's not like you never put the extra defender on the field, but if you do, you know, you can go with two nose tackles and a Benny, for example, that would be fine. But I think Peebles, if this were draft were to come true and Benny gets selected and Matabike can play, I think Peebles' days are probably numbered.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that is kind of a sad reality to me. Personally, I love Peebles, love the energy he brings. Saw him at I got to see him at training camp last year. Dude's a real fun guy. I really do hope that he develops more as a run defender so that he could potentially have a sort of a positional battle with Rashawn Benny to try and potentially take that spot over him.
All right, they had another fourth round selection here.
Yes, we did. Pick 120. We picked a guy who this slot was initially, we were hoping to try and snag an edge rusher when I made this pick and when I made this trade initially, but Max Llewellyn, who was the best edge rusher on the board at the time, he was gone. So we were kind of left with a decision between LT Overton and the guy who actually ended up being our pick, that is Dejon Stripling, which I think it was a pretty massive shock that he was still on the board at this time. When we made the trade, Jacoby Lane was on the board. Skylar Bell was still on the board. Granted, he's a bit older. And Stripling was also on the board. I really do like Stripling. I don't necessarily think he's a top 10 receiver in this draft class, but he's certainly close to that. 6'2", very good 40 time. I believe he actually had the same 40 as Tez Walker did. So really, really good long speed. Got to watch some of his tape leading up to the draft. Really liked what I saw. He doesn't get a lot of separation. He doesn't make a lot of separation, but he can certainly be a defender down the field, kind of get that vertical separation that way. Really good weapon. Would love to see him in this offense as that fourth receiver behind Flowers, Bateman, Walker, and a guy who could potentially develop into that wide receiver three, potentially wide receiver two role over the course of his rookie deal.
Okay. He's an honorable mention on my list. In fact, your three wide receivers you consider here are exactly 16, 17, and 18 on my list, and Stripling was number 18. So the choices between these two, I think, would have been tough, but he's not a great contested catch guy, but he has 6 touchdowns and 0 interceptions on his targets are what fueled that 136.7 QBR. So we talk about contested catches. Some of it's, you know, making the catches where you're, you know, you have a chance there. And another huge part of it is playing defense when you need to and making sure that those interceptions don't occur. And that at least was a big plus for Stribling. I had him as a value selection in round 4. And then the other two, I also had his 4 or 5 guys were Bell and Lane. Deciding factors between those three?
Well, the deciding factor between those three was that Bell ended up getting picked at pick 116 and Lane ended up getting picked at 113. So we could have gone Bell at pick 115, but we were more worried about Benny getting taken than we were about having 2 wide receivers on the board, knowing we picked in 3 slots, I mean 5 slots. So we felt that it was the better decision to kind of take the risk that only one of those receivers would have been taken as opposed to both of them, just to get the defensive lineman we were after. And I mean, once we got to pick 120, those guys, I just said value in the 4th, as opposed to Overton, who I think we probably would have been overdrafting at that point. Yeah. It was just a pretty clear decision to go after that. Speaking of other positions we could have considered at that point, corners on there. The best corner on the board was Julian Neal, who I did briefly consider, but I kind of feel like the 4th round is sort of the par value for him. I don't think he had fallen that much from where he would personally be on my big board.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.com. For some, summer is their favorite season. Travel picks up, kids are out of school, and adventure is the focus. For others, juggling it all can be tough, can make you feel overwhelmed, and can make you count down the minutes until the kids are back in school. I know I look forward to summer as a time to take a break, but as a self-employed person, time spent away from my work is time I stress over wasting. That's where BetterHelp comes in. BetterHelp is a quality therapist who work according to a strict code of conduct and are fully licensed in the U.S. BetterHelp does the initial therapist matching for you so you can focus on your therapy goals. A short questionnaire helps identify your needs and preferences, and their 12-plus years of experience and industry-leading match fulfillment rate means they typically get it right on the first time. If you aren't happy with your match, switch to a different therapist at any time. With over 30,000 therapists, BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform, having served over 6 million people globally, and it works. With an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for a live session, based on 1.7 million client reviews. You don't have to say yes to everything this summer. Find support in therapy. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
A guy like Devin Moore would have been good at that spot, but he ended up going a little earlier, pick 112. So corner ended up getting pushed down the board again, just given we didn't expect Stribling to be there. So kind of ran the card up for him.
All right. Well, fair enough. So Stribling, an X receiver, a little bit of duplication probably with, I don't want to say Wallace, but it's Walker, in terms of, you know, I think that it's probably fair to say that DeAndre Hopkins took playing time away from Walker this last year. And are you concerned at all about that happening again if a player like Stribling comes in, or, you know, in either direction, frankly?
Well, I mean, as they say, kind of let the cream of the crop rise to the top. If Stribling does end up taking snaps away from Tez Walker, I believe it's because he would have earned it. Okay. So I'd rather have the better player out there. Granted, I'm very high on Tez. Love seeing his development this year. I am pretty high on what he's going to be able to do for us in 2026. But at the same time, you got to have I feel like we have to have a succession plan. Tez is going into his 3rd year. I have a good feeling that Stribling will be able to be a really good wide receiver 4 for us in those 4 wide receiver sets. And then going into if Tez ends up not getting that second contract, then you kind of have the same situation that you're in now where Stribling would be in his 3rd year while Tez is leaving the team, moving quite easily into that role.
Okay. All right. Well, fair enough. I don't think it's a bad pick or anything. And I had all those guys fairly close and you were boxed out on a couple. Now take us back into round 5. Now you have another pick coming up. It looks like it's at 154.
Yes.
Yep. So going into the 5th, we were kind of staring down some edge rushers. There's a guy I really like, Nnamdi Tucker. He went a couple picks before to Dallas. So who we ultimately ended up with was a guy I think is a perfect complement for the edge rusher room we already have. You know, Mike Green and Trey Hendrickson, they're going to be your, you know, third down pure pass rushers, but probably don't offer as much as you would like in the run game. So the guy we settled on was Caden Curry. Good size, 6'3", 257, shorter arms. His production in 2025 was pretty outstanding. 66 tackles, 16 and a half tackles for loss, 11 sacks, 2 forced fumbles, and a fumble recovery. So he's a football player through and through. We'd like him potentially as a Sam guy as well. And then what we really liked about him is a guy that could go inside on those passing downs too. So if you call it a race car, what you want to call it, you know, he could be in there standing up, kind of filling in that too. So we really liked him. 38 pressures last season.
Yeah, outrageous close rate of 26 over 46, which I mean, 13 23rds, anything over 50% is so exceedingly rare that it's worth talking about. And Tui Pelotu just came to the NFL. Well, he was a rookie this last year, right? And had a huge year. I think that's right. He's not a second-year player already, is he? Because time is moving too fast for me otherwise.
I think he's a first-year player. Okay. Yeah. I could be wrong, though. I remember hearing his name last year.
All right. Yeah, he certainly had a great year. But an Ohio State guy, and so far you're pretty much staying with the P4 conferences, which is, I think, what DaCosta has done in recent years. So fine with the Curry pick. Move on to your second pick, which I absolutely freaking love, by the way, in round 5.
One more thing I'll add real quick. We really liked Mason Rager, but we kind of looked up his injuries. He seemed pretty banged up, and the diagnosis didn't seem great. So that made our pick even easier. I just wanted to mention.
I believe when I saw it, he had a knee infection, and he has a plate in there now. So anytime I hear an infection, I'm immediately scared off because there's a lot of question marks there. But he was someone we considered. And also, kind of at this point in the draft process, this is kind of where we started to have our reflection on the round 2 pick. Because at this point, we were up at pick 154. There was only 5 tight ends who actually went at that point.
Incredible.
Yeah, which I was kind of floored by that point, given how great of a tight end class this is. Sadiq went, obviously we picked Stowers, Claire went in third, I think Roush went in the fourth, and we were left with Justin Jolie on the board still at pick 154. So it kind of begged the question, looking back on it, could we have gotten Yakus or Chris Johnson? Pick 45, ended up with Justin Jolie, who is personally, I think, either my tight end 4 or 5 in this draft class, all the way in the 5th round, which, to be clear, I do not expect him to be there on draft day.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. Do you believe that the run on tight ends will happen earlier? And if so, when? When will it happen? Around 3, around 4? When do you expect it to happen?
Personally, I expect it to be in the latter half of round 3. I expect maybe early round 4. I think the Ravens are in a good position at pick 114 to take a tight end if they feel so inclined. I do think that it's maybe like a, give maybe a 60-70% chance that Jolie's there at pick 115. I think he'd be a good guy for them if they chose not to go with Stowers in round 2 or maybe Claire in round 3. Mm-hmm. Also decently high on Roush, although you're looking more for projection than production that he put up in college. So yeah, going into pick 174, having lost our pick 162 for that trade and pick 173 in that trade, we were looking at corner again. We kind of had a short list of corners going into the 5th round that we would have loved to take at 174. Prysock, Dennings were on that list. Ended up that all those guys ended up getting taken before the 160s. So leading up to the 170s, we kind of determined that we think getting that second tight end will be the best bang for our buck. And looking into it, I kind of had some tight ends identified beforehand that I would really like to go after. Given that our pick was Stowers in round two, I wanted a guy who I viewed as a good blocker. So if we had not picked Stowers, I would have been also including Daquan Wright on this list. I really do like him, but not good enough, not as good enough as a blocker. Granted, he does play more in line. But the two it came down to were Eli Raridan and Riley Nowakowski. And Raridan ended up going at pick 169 to Arizona. Round five is kind of where the tight end run happened in our draft. So going down to 174, I saw that Nowakowski was there. I know some boards have him a little lower. I've seen some in the seventh round, some in the sixth. I'm personally a lot more higher on him given the stuff I was able to see him do with Indiana. I think he's a phenomenal blocker. He lined up at the H-back position a couple times. I think he is a guy who can comfortably let you walk away from the tight end we just signed. Sorry, his name is blank.
Oh, Durham Smythe, you're saying.
Yeah, Smythe.
Yeah.
Let you comfortably let him walk out the door next year if you feel comfortable with that.
After 26.
Yeah, after 26.
For 1 year. Yeah.
After 26. I personally think we're in a situation where we do end up carrying four tight ends on this roster. Smythe probably takes Ricard's roster spot from last year, and we carry two rookie tight ends. I know that's been discussed in the media. I personally have been on that train this whole time. I think with a tight end class as deep as this, you're kind of in a very good position to take two great guys, potentially at a discount from where you might see him in other drafts.
Okay. First of all, absolutely freaking love Riley Nowakowski. Did you happen to know that going into making this selection at all? Had you seen anything from me on it?
I actually had watched some of your videos coming up towards this process to do some research on positional groups. But Riley Nowakowski was a guy I saw as well, just with his – he's a phenomenal blocker, yeah. First of all.
Good blocker, but he is a missed tackle waiting to happen every time he gets the football. And Indiana's offense, obviously, a lot of the check down stuff and a lot of, you know, outlet passes went to him. When I say a lot, he only had like some ridiculous number of 62 college receiving targets in 6 years. So it's not a lot, but he breaks tackles at a phenomenal rate. It's the second highest, I believe, in this entire draft class. Only Michael Trigg is at a higher rate of missed tackles than him. And he had 10.8 yards per target this last year, which is no joke at all, on a passer rating of 130. So there is some Mendoza effect there, no doubt about it.
Yes.
But, and there is some other talent at Indiana, you know, creating things. But absolutely love the guy. And I think he's such a fit for what Eddie Faulkner is and for not having to quit cold turkey on not having a fullback. If you want to line him behind the back room, that won't be a problem. If you want to line him up on the edge, that won't be a problem. He can do a lot of what Ricard did, and outstanding guy to get the football in space, unlike Ricard.
Yeah, and also mentioning another honorable mention of that pick, we did look at Borkature, tight end out of Texas A&M, but the choice was made to go with Nowakowski because Nowakowski has a lot more receiving upside, I believe, than Borkature does, and also he's I think about a year younger. So obviously some considerations that went in there. Overall, it was a question of, do I think he's going to be there in round six? But I like him a lot, and I really didn't want to take that risk. So we ended up going Nowakowski at pick 174, tight end at 80 now.
All right. No issue with the value at that pick at all. I do have him as a 5-6 value, which means 5 on par, 6 on value, but I liked it. I certainly love the player, and I hope the Ravens do get him in the actual draft. So take us on to the next selection here.
Okay. And then I don't know if you mentioned it, but Michael Trigg was another tight end I really liked, and he didn't go to the fifth round.
Incredible. Yeah.
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 Trigg, that will not happen on draft night. That will not.
Yeah. Trigg actually went pick 168 to the Carolina Panthers.
Yeah. Okay. So that made the Stowers pick feel a little worse.
Yeah, one of the most extraordinary catch radiuses you'll ever see, and the best missed tackle tight end in the entire draft, and a big physical guy. Not necessarily a great blocker, but he can give you a little something there too, I think.
Yep. Okay, on to the sixth round. At this point, we are looking at best player available. We are looking specifically cornerback, inside linebacker, safety, something in that vein. And what it came down to was a cornerback, a very polarizing player, someone I think I really like, but also I'm slightly confused about. Okay, so TJ Hall, the cornerback out of Iowa, good size, 6 foot, 190 pounds, but all his athletic scores in the combine were terrible. Ran a 4.60, three cone, 10 yard. They were all really bad numbers. But something that I love about him, he might be the single best tackling cornerback I have ever watched film on. He had 47 tackles, missed zero. 30 of them were solo tackles. So he plays extremely tough. He plays press really well right off the snap. And I think his lack of speed, he makes up for potentially in his ability to press. In zone, I think he was also showed some good instincts. But again, his weakness is going to be, you know, over the top balls. But I feel good about him. He's a 4-year starter, and the coaches really seem to love him there.
So if I'm looking at him, I am very concerned about the speed number. TJ Tampa's already on this team in his third year. That would be the concern I'd have about a pick like that. Now, you're in the sixth round. Beggars can't be choosers at this point. You got to shoot your shot with somebody who has warts, and that. You know, you're gonna have to choose between how it goes. You've got some guys, including Justin Jefferson at Alabama, who I probably would have had lower. But Red Murdoch is a name I haven't even seen yet, and I need to go look at some tape of him now to get a look. But well, you guys considered him.
Yes, those were all considerations we had. Pick 211. We really did want to target a Will linebacker. There is some concern right now about you could potentially be looking at cutting Roquan next year for cap savings. I believe it's about $20 million that you'd be saving in cap by cutting him next year. Mm-hmm. Probably going to see Trent Simpson walk out the door next year in free agency, which would leave you with a room that is just Teddy Buchanan and
the Iowa guy.
I feel terrible for blanking on his name right now.
And I'm doing it too. He's a 482-40, so that might be the reason. But his dad is all over the internet. I mean, what's going on here?
Jay Higgins.
Jay Higgins.
Yes. You'd be left with a room with just Jay Higgins and D.B. Cannon. Now, granted, I am really, really impressed with what Teddy was able to show last year as a fourth round pick.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'd be pretty happy about him still being on the roster, but granted, you can't just have a situation where you only have one guy. There's no succession plan. I think we need to start looking at least just getting more bodies in the room at this point. I don't think as a team we're in a position to just like maybe draft a linebacker in the second round unless they're like a clear best player available situation. I really think Tyler Santucci as our coach has been linebackers coach has been phenomenal. I think you can give him some talent and he can make miracles happen in a way like he did with Teddy. But this is a thing that we're probably going to be pushing into next year, making that a problem for 2027.
That it could well be the way of it. And they may think, well, we can solve this with platooning. We can solve this with a veteran. We can solve this with a draft pick. Then there are multiple solutions, ways they could solve it. I looked in round two had an interesting player, and I thought round three or four would have another interesting player, because I think Jacob Rodriguez will fall a little bit because of age and some of the measurables. He's got some issues there, but boy, can that guy flip the field like nobody else. But the player I really love, who's 2.5 years younger, is Anthony Hill. And I saw he went in the 30s in your draft, and I was like, oh, crap, that sucks.
Yeah.
Or maybe he's 41.
He was 41. He went 41. Rodriguez went 35 to the Texans. It would have definitely been in consideration at pick 45. Mm-hmm. I really have liked what I've seen of Rodriguez. Doing some early mocks before people caught on, you were still able to get him in the fifth. But now, after Combine, Senior Bowl, et cetera, he's just rocketed up the board. People are finally kind of seeing how much of a talent he is. So I would not be surprised if he's gone by pick 45, but if he's there, could be a consideration.
So if you see Joseph Stalin's picture come across your screen on draft night, that's Rodriguez. same mustache. Sorry, Tony. you can't.
Yeah, Rodriguez is one of my favorite. Yeah. Rodriguez is one of my favorite players in the draft.
Yeah.
And then, you know, while we're on the topic of inside linebackers, you know, I think this is a big year for Trenton Simpson. I mean, just from the optic, you know, view of him, his muscles have muscles. He's lightning quick. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, this could be the year where he really gets the processing speed up and really becomes a dynamic duo with Roquan. And, you know, maybe that could lend to a second contract when Roquan's gone. We'll see.
It'd have to be a plan to get that inside linebacker spot filled. And I'm not sure that we've seen that out of Buchanan yet. And, you know, there's nothing about his rookie year that projects him to be the Ravens' next Mike. That's where I am on it right now. There's no way in hell that Simpson's going to be the Ravens' next Mike. He has to play Will. So the question is, can they get another Mike in this draft? And there are guys that are available. Rodriguez and Hill are outstanding NFL caliber Mikes. They both have Hill has all the size you'd want, and Rodriguez has a lot of the actual play credentials that you'd want. But it's going to be a hard position for the Ravens to fill, and they may have to get creative with it. I kind of trust Minter to do that too, that they'll find a way to fix that in 27.
Yeah. The way I was thinking about it is potentially cutting Roquan and maybe using some of his free agency, some of his draft, some of his cap savings to get another linebacker in free agency. I think that could end up being the route we take, because $20 million savings, I don't imagine signing a replacement or guy for maybe just 1 year, 2 years is going to cost more than $20 million a year. I think that'd probably be the fiscally more responsible thing to do. But going into round seven, we did end up taking that linebacker. Kind of funny story with this pick. It was Owen Heineke from Oklahoma. I think that's how you pronounce his last name. He got an injunction a couple hours after our mock ended, which kind of invalidated that pick. He will be returning to the NCAA.
Huh.
So that was not news to us when we made the pick, came out later that night. But we would have moved one of our priority free agents, Wade Woodaz, linebacker out of Clemson, to pick 236 as our selection there. Don't necessarily have a lot to say. Didn't quite do a lot of scouting this far down on the linebackers. It was only a brief cursory look at just athleticism, missed tackle rate, kind of like what I saw there out of Woodaz. And same with Heineke. I think both slot to be special teams contributors going into the season. Obviously, just need bodies in the room. At this point, seemed like they were a good selection in the seventh round. Guys who were potentially on the bubble between draftable and priority UDFA. So I think we made the best of our pick there. try to just get a body in the room.
All right. You went punter from my alma mater with the last selection. Go ahead and announce that. And then I kind of want to wrap this up here.
Yeah. Second to last, but the most exciting pick of the draft. We drafted, going into the draft, we knew we were going to take a punter at some point. We were hoping for Jack Stonehouse, the consensus number one punter on the board. He got taken by the pesky Steelers at pick 211. So when it came time for us to draft a punter at 247, we were between two guys, Tommy Doman out of Florida and Brett Thorson out of Georgia. We ultimately went with Tommy Doman. He's really big guy. The big thing that steered him in our direction was that he has experience, a lot of experience holding. He's punted, he's done kickoffs, he's kicked field goals, and he has an elite hang time, which I kind of read about. He led the FBS with 4.52 second average hang time. The next closest was like in the 4.3s. They question his accuracy, question his distance a little bit, but with his elite hang time, it shows he does have some power to probably develop, with Randy Brown and such.
Better directional kicking and whatnot. Now, one thing does come to mind here. You're picking just a few picks from Mr. Irrelevant here at 250, right? I mean, it's a seventh round compensatory pick that the Ravens pick up. So it's bottom of the seventh.
Yes.
At that point, you're kind of competing not with other teams for the punter you eventually went with. It's more about, do you want to lock up another priority UDFA? So forgetting for a moment that you guys had kind of decided you want to take a punter and you wanted the draft to go this way. If you're the Ravens, do you think they will actually lock up a UDFA they really like without having to pay a lot of their UDFA bonus money at that point?
Personally, I think the Ravens actually might end up going punter in the sixth round. Just in general, the way I saw it, we are kind of the clear best place for a punter to go who's UDFA. We don't have a clear starter. I believe every single team in the NFL has at least one punter that they signed this offseason who's projected to be a starter. We signed a guy who wasn't a starter last year. Mm-hmm. Every other team has a punter that has starting experience right now. So
you're making my point for me. Wouldn't that be an easy place where, first of all, Randy knows all the punters out there because they've all gone through his camps. Okay. So, he's going to know who to sign. Wouldn't it be smart if the Ravens use that for a priority UDFA instead, unless Randy Brown has, an A grade or whatever the grade would be. He's not going to give a round grade probably these punters, but he has a super high grade on one punter and he's a lot lower on all the other guys.
Yeah. So my thought process with that is, knowing that we are by far the best destination for punters, my thought was that other teams were going to take punters that were the highly rated ones in the draft in the seventh round. And we pick at the very end of the seventh round. So that's what led my thought process to why I think the Ravens will potentially take a punter at pick 211 in the sixth round when it comes time for the draft. We did actually have another seventh round pick may have flown under the radar, because with our trade with the Packers, we did have three seventh round picks. And that other seventh round pick went to Noah Whittington, running back out of Oregon, who for me was a priority free agent. Oregon ran a lot of zone scheme, outside zone. It's why people are also so high on Pregnon, given that scheme fit. He is an older prospect, but once again, we're in the seventh round, kind of 10 picks from the end. Beggars can't be choosers. Mm-hmm. What led us to taking him is he's very highly graded as a pass protector. And he's also one of the faster running backs that was still available. I believe NFL Draft Buzz, which they have an other on it, so kind of take it with a grain of salt, but they had him at a 4.41, I believe, 40 time. So if I'm taking that at face value, that's pretty fast. So at that point, it was kind of, let's just get a guy in there who I think could end up potentially being a replacement for Justice Hill in a year. A guy you can have out there on third down, be a pass protector, a guy who you could have there up there potentially as a to spell Derrick Henry on the first down, second down, who could pass block, who could be a speedster off the edge. Obviously, I don't think he's as fast as Keith Mitchell, but I don't really think anyone in this draft class, running back wise, is as fast as Keith Mitchell is.
Sure. But Keith Mitchell also a UDFA, so you sometimes can find speed there when other teams don't think there's special teams value that they can ascribe to a later round player. Guys, fantastic job on this. And I want to talk about at least two reasons, and there's probably many more that I really like this. The first is, this is a real mock draft against other real human beings, hopefully who are all trying as hard as you. And I've seen some of the other things. Looks like the Cleveland guy was actually trying to reset the franchise. He traded away Myles Garrett to the Rams during the draft, and he tried another trade. It was, you know, a huge amount of talent for a huge amount of future picks that got nixed by the moderators of the draft. But the process looks extremely clean and more like a draft than the 9 million mocks you see out there who people are doing it off a mock draft simulator, which the question, there's always going to be questions about the validity of the opponent choices and how they're really looking at things. Just hearing the way you guys reasoned it out pick by pick, really loved it. I mean, you obviously took the process very seriously yourself. So that was extremely good as well. And the thought that went into this and the write-up, really appreciate it. Tony sent me this, and it's extremely well done. It includes stuff. I'll try and add this link in the description. Actually, if you guys could add the link when I promo the thing, it'd be much appreciated. But if you want to take a read on this, it's very well done. And it talks about the you know, other free agents they'd like to sign and some priority UDFAs and whatnot. But great job, guys. And I really appreciate you coming on and talking us through, you know, a very fine and I think more of a realistic mock draft than I've seen in a lot of other players. And you know what I also like? I like the self-effacing nature of looking back at your second round pick and having some buyer's remorse over the tight end selected there. That, hey, maybe we didn't do the right thing given how the rest of this has worked out. But if you don't have those kind of regrets, this is something my dad said once, that you're just not facing your regrets if you don't have any. You're just ignoring them. But that's a really cool set of selections. I obviously love Riley Nowakowski, but I like the way you went through this process.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having us, Ken. Overall, I think we're pretty satisfied with how it turned out. Could have done some things differently, but I think if we ended up having a draft like this, overall, I think it'd be pretty satisfied going into the season. Granted, we probably need to look to sign a few remaining free agents, potentially a Clowney, Reader, maybe potentially bring back Hopkins, but overall, I'm pretty satisfied with how this turned out.
Yeah. Now let's tell folks where they can contact you online. You're both members of the Reddit community. We talked about that a little bit earlier, which is outstanding community, by the way. It's not just Buck Allen memes anymore, but Tony, where can folks talk to you? Is it on Twitter or Reddit better?
Nope. Just Reddit at Tony G Fool. I'm just a Ravens fan, diehard nerd. And yeah, that's about it.
All right. Great. How about you, Matt?
Yeah. You'll also mostly find me on the Ravens Reddit, under the handle Liquid Plasmid 7. You'll find me a lot on the mock draft mega thread. I've been kind of doing a lot of those. Sometimes one a day, okay. A little bit too much at times.
All right. Well, very cool, guys. Appreciate you joining us. Other folks out there, if you have a question you want to come up on either on draft night, use hashtag film study mailbag. Particularly if you want me to explain something in a 1 minute video, I'll be happy to do it. And please join us for the draft stream that starts on Thursday. We'll be on from the very first pick of the draft until at least the Ravens' final pick on day three, which is pretty much the entire draft, given unless they trade out of some of those final picks. So Matt, Tony, would love to have either of you join us as panelists if you'd like to for part of that, particularly on day three. I've got openings, so we'll talk about that afterwards. And thanks again for coming on.
Thank you.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.